I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities, and we hope gain for a poem that interests us some new readers and listeners. And I say listeners because Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our Penn Sound archive, writing.upenn.edu/pennsound. Today I'm joined here in Philadelphia at the Kelly Writer's House in our third floor garret studio by Erica Kaufman, whose books of poems include Sensory Impulse, and whose verse appears in periodicals widely, Rain Taxi, Verse, Contact, Boog City, and who, with Rachel Levitsky, co-leads Belladonna Books and Reading Series at belladonnaseries.org. And by Joe Malutis, media artist and writer whose work across the arts includes experimental sound and radio video works, for which he does his own music, new media, experimental narrative, theoretical writings, and various media and lit hybrids, whose great blog, New Jersey as an Impossible Object, was my own first glimpse at this new media talent. And by Zach Piper, a Milwaukee-based poet and songwriter whose poems have appeared in small press publications such as those issued by Dodo Bird, Russ Buckle Books, The Blue Canary Press, whose fabulous band, The Trusty Knife, can be heard on their MySpace page and presumably elsewhere, and whose band Farms in Trouble employed, among other things, the sound of a bike spoke and released some of their songs on cassette. Is that right, mm-hmm. Zach?
That's correct, yeah.
Welcome all three of you to Poem Talk. Joe thanks. And Zach, your first Hi. Time on yep. Poem Talk, and a long way getting here. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Zach, for finding your way from Milwaukee. So how did you do it? You drove. Did you stop anywhere?
We drove. My friend and percussionist Brock has one of those little... What do you call those?
GPS
things, which are amazing. I felt guilty for using it like I wasn't doing the real thing.
So you didn't come to Philadelphia from Milwaukee via Abilene?
No.
Because of the GPS. And you stopped at Easton, Pennsylvania to pick up Joe.
That's correct.
We're really glad that you guys made the long trip.
Thank you. Pleasure
to be poem here. Today, thank you. Our poem today is Alice Notley's I, the People, which appeared in her 1986 book, Parts of a Wedding, and can also be found in her Wesleyan Press New and Selected Poems. Our recording of the poem comes from a reading Notley gave at Buffalo in April 1987. So here now is Alice Notley reading I, the People.
This one is called I, the People, a title which I'm slightly ashamed of now, but the poem's pretty good. I, the People, to the things that are, were, and come to be. We were once what we know when we make love, when we go away from each other because we have been created at 10th and A, in winter and of trees and of the history of houses. We hope we are notes of the musical scale of heaven. I, the People, so repetitious, and my vision of to hold the neighbors loosely here in light of jail. My gel, my vision, come out of my eyes to hold you, surround you in gold, and you don't know it ever. Everyone, we the people, having our visions of gold and silver and silken liquid light flowed from our eyes and caressing all around all the walls. I am a late pre in this dawn of we the people to the things that are and were and come to be. Once what we knew was only and numbers became. It is numbers and gold, and at 10th and A, you don't have to know it ever. Opening words that show that we were once the first to recognize the immortality of numbered bodies. And we are the masters of hearing and saying at the double edge of body and breath. We the lovers and the eyes, all over inside her when the wedding is over and the park lies cold and lifeless. I, the people, whatever is said by the first one along, Angel Agate. I wear your colors. I hear what we say and what we say. And I, the people, am still parted in two and would cry. In the dark, I pretend that I hold you. This sort of obsession is a political correction, too. For the lover will find him, and the people are you.
Joe, let's start with you. Did this poem sneaked up on you? You read it and read it and read it, and first it seemed simple, then it seemed hard, then it seemed simple.
Tell us
what happened.
Well, I think, you know, I, one of the things that I might have been avoiding really thinking about was, and I sort of just came to me on the plane last night, is, you know, there's a lot of this, the notes of the musical scale of heaven, and this idea of the sort of the light coming out of her eyes, and this sort of very sort of this ancient mystical way of thinking about vision. You know, there is this mystical element to the poem, and I didn't want to deal with it, especially because I was thinking of it as a political poem, but then as a non-political poem. But anyway, so the mystical stuff here, what seemed to me to be going on was it's this agon in American culture between the sort of Gnostic impulse behind things and then the sort of rationality of democracy.
Zach, what do we do with the politics of this poem? Do you have a sense of
it? Well, I read it in a way that, first of all, I get a sort of tender sense of humor from the poem also. I feel in a way she might actually, you know, she said at the beginning of the reading, I'm sort of embarrassed by that title now.
Yeah, why did she say that?
Because I would say sort of like almost a gentle parody of the way political language abstracts things to such a degree. I mean, I, we, people, power. How many times do you hear people in the newspaper?
Exactly.
People are always saying the people.
Yeah.
Who are people?
People repetitious.
What are people? Who are they?
That doesn't sound gentle. That sounds like calling the preamble to the Constitution bullshit. I mean, wouldn't that be a harder-edged politics?
But calling the preamble to the Constitution bullshit would be giving it too much power. Because, you know, like...
The preamble?
What is that Blake thing? You know, like, there's no love like opposition. You know, I think she's using it. Everything is material to her. I think she's using language and...
So the title, I'm trying to get at why she said in their introduction to the Buffalo reading, why she said she's a little embarrassed by the title, but she likes the poem.
Yeah.
The title probably says more about an antagonistic politics than the poem, which is tenderer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
right.
The title
right.
is kind of a... red meat, really, for those who want to see a kind of clear lefty politics.
Right, that, exactly.
Yeah.
I would totally agree.
So now let's take the title out and just do the poem, Zach. So mm-hmm. What are the politics of the poem? Is it like the democracy of the body? Is it like the democracy of the Lower East Side? What is it?
Well, I think all of the above. I mean, I think it's kind of against any sort of exclusivity, against any sense of categorizing those experiences, in a sense, because, you know, her poem's filled with particulars, you know, tenth and a, but at the same time, it's also filled with the things that people think when they're walking around during the day, which is a state of mystical consciousness.
Kind of like a Ted Berrigan poem, in a way.
Well, in a way, but, I mean, there's a sense of mystical experience that all people engage in when they're walking around during the day, and some of those phrases feel like that to me. And a phrase, you know, when you go down to the poem and she has phrases sort of clipped, like the things that are and were to come to be, and then the next phrase, once what we knew was only and numbers became, it is numbers. The way the phraseology works feels like the way your mind works. You know, it's randomly cut, and that's akin to the mystical experience.
Eric, is that an aspect of the poem that you particularly like? And if so, why?
Yeah, I mean, I think that she's doing something very interesting in terms of giving a glimpse of, like, routine thoughts and the way that we interact with our environments. But at the same time, with these clipped statements, she seems to be somehow, you know, making a political commentary on the possessive and on the subject and, you know, who or what is the subject.
Well, it is the American problem, you know. Are we, is it e pluribus unum or the opposite? You know, in other words, is it we or I? Which comes first, the I or the we? Is that a fair way of asking the question?
Certainly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Joe, your thought?
Which comes first, the I or the we? Well, in the poem, I comes first.
Yeah, but what about in American democracy
American
and
democracy,
citizenship?
It's
supposedly the we,
right? Supposedly the we. I think American democracy is sophisticated enough that the dialectic is between I and we is a part of it. I think what's interesting is that I think both I and the people. The reason the title might be embarrassing is that I think she sets that up as being the two ends of of a problem, you know, sort of like, even though American democracy includes both people and I in their dialectic, this middle ground of we that can be intimate, and it can be, you know, but it's also sort of very, very temporary and very, very fraught. You know, after she says I the people, then it's there's a repetition of we. And I think that this what happens at the we is what's important in this poem.
And we are the masters of hearing and saying at the double edge of body and breath. We the lovers and the eyes all over inside her when the wedding is over and the park lies cold and lifeless. I the people, whatever is said by the first one along, Angel Agate. I wear your colors. I hear what we say and what we say. And I the people am still parted in two and would cry.
There's a wedding here, and the book is called Parts of a Wedding.
Yeah.
Is this a wedding night? Is this a wedding poem? Is this a gift to the newlyweds? Like, you're now really understand what it's like to be members of a democracy, citizens? Well, I'm very moved by that possibility, but I don't know.
I just imagined something a little bit more photographic. I actually did a sort of little bit of Google psychogeography on 10th and A. And there's four corners to that, right? There's the park, Tompkins Square, right? And then there's the boys' club. And then there's a Russian Orthodox church, which is where I imagine the wedding coming out of, if we want to be sort of really pedestrian about connecting this to a place.
Pedestrian is a powerful word there.
Exactly, especially since this is a preamble. But then there's also something called the Horus Cafe, which has this big Egyptoid eye, which is also sort of interesting.
Google Earth. You were down on the ground.
Yes, I was down on the ground in
From
Google
Milwaukee
Earth.
Or wherever you were. Where are you?
So I'm in Seattle.
Seattle right now.
But so I imagine her, she's in the park, you know, and she sees an anonymous wedding coming out of the Russian Orthodox Church. I mean, I don't know. That's how I'm seeing it.
Erica, if that's true, what Joe just said, he just made it up. But if it's true, is this more or less alluring to you? As really a, I'm here at 10th and A, and this is what I'm feeling now. Or not. You can tell Joe that he's full of it if you want.
Yeah, I'm
I'm not sure, because I think that in a lot of ways it could be read as perhaps a satire of what you gain once you're married, if we're going that route.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the process of getting married means that you now have certain rights and a certain status.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it makes the poem change a lot for me to think about it so clearly within, you know, being a voyeur of a wedding,
out. Well, even 10th and A, I was really hesitant to sort of locate that, because I also feel that the words 10th and A, the way she writes them, it almost seems like just a number and a letter in a Joseph Cornell box, right? It doesn't have to be Tompkins Square.
So here's a question, and Zach, this is for you if you want it. 10th and A, you know, it is numbers and gold, and at 10th and A, you don't have to know it ever. I mean, in a way, 10th and A is an exception to the way America has interpreted the preamble and the getting of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, 10th and A is exactly the place where democracy gets really realized at the level of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So which is it? Is it both?
Well,
is 10th and A exceptional? Like, so radical that it's not part of not counted in the preamble? The preamble never anticipated it?
Well,
or part of it?
No, I think that what she's saying is that that personal vision and the realization of that will outride any mode of abstraction forced upon you by a political system. You know, I really think that it's really her sense of, in a way, as odd as it seems, I almost feel like it's a poem that's really about the sense of the personal overriding, you know, abstraction that's forced upon us politically. I think that the wedding goes with that. I agree with Erica. I think that there's no doubt when I see, you know, when she even uses phrases, you know, like we the lovers and the eyes all over inside her when the wedding is over and the park lies cold and lifeless in parentheses.
That's
there.
Such a weird
Those
line.
Parentheses are really interesting to me, because I feel as though she's kind of being coy about, here's a platitude about how the park lies, you know, outside of 10th and A, this wedding.
You mean the quotation marks.
The quotation marks,
it's
right.
Like a deliberate...
Lies cold and lifeless, as if someone were to say, well, look how cold and lifeless
exactly.
it is.
Exactly.
And she would say what in rejoinder?
Well, and she would, you know, she would say that, well, she would say whatever she said after that in the poem. I mean, but
well, yeah, and I think that's that would be the rejoinder because yeah. she says whatever is said by the first one along, Angel Agate. I feel like, you know, because Lies Cold and Lifeless is presented to us as she's distancing herself from it as if it is a cliche.
Right.
But then the whole wedding is a kind of cliche in itself. And then she is making herself open to a kind of randomness of interaction. So the first person who comes along and says something, that's the angel. I'm not sure what to do with the agate, but there's a kind of like, and the angelic anonymity of just nice. A passerby.
Yeah.
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 Erica, I'm going to do something unfair, but I know you can handle it. I can't help but think of this poem. Well, the poem was written in, let's say, the mid-80s. And Alice Notley's heyday of, you know, Lower East New York-y downtown, you know, she was really super important. From, let's say, the late 60s to 1992 when she left to move to Paris. So this is right in the thick of her locality. There, and not only just a locality, but being part of a second or third generation of a certain aesthetic. So I guess what I would ask you is, could you be really reductive and imagine that this poem could exemplify the New York school style insofar as it can be taught that way or should be, and I assume not, but what would you say? How does it exemplify a certain mode, either in its ideas or in its poetics?
Well, I think that, you know, if I were to be teaching this poem, I would probably present it as kind of a New York school poem because of the reference to a specific moment or place in New York. So we're on 10th and A in the mid-80s.
That's a place to start.
And you, there is, although it's not as straightforward as a Berrigan or O'Hara poem might be, but there is a kind of I do this, I do that sort of aesthetic. Mm. But when it comes to Notley's work, I'm always resistant to classifying her as part of any particular school because I think that she goes beyond that, and she does that in this poem too because she doesn't just write, you know, well, I was walking down the street on 10th and A and I saw this and I saw that, and not to say that there's anything wrong with that.
And
but
not
I think
to say that,
that
there isn't more to the New York school than that right. kind of poem. But the politics of place, that's what interests me. In asking that question, is this a politics, this attitude toward the preamble and to a self-constituting people, a democracy, that she clearly believes in but may or may not be parodying the preamble? I mean, typical or atypical of the New York school, what is the politics of the New York school insofar as it would deal with we the people? Tough question.
That is a tough question. And my response is actually to step a bit away from politics as like a larger idea and to think more about gender and what she's doing with gender and politics in this poem, which I think is quite interesting. And it's a question that Notley's work addresses quite valiantly overall throughout, you know, as recent as Alma. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, there's only one her in the poem, that it's a we the people, and she's inverting public and private, and there's this kind of
tone. Well, that's a
tone.
Move. That's a move. Yeah. The inverting of public, saying we the people is not as Zach's been saying, not an abstract statement about just random identities. But if you think of it as a woman, you think of it as subjectivity. You think of it as physical. You think of it as located.
One thing that kept circling through my head as I was reading this was the great Stein line, I am I because my little dog knows me, which I just keep hearing in this poem in terms of, you know, thinking about how the domestic can be something else, especially when you think about deconstructing the cliched role of the self, particularly the female self, you know, within politics or within, you know, traditional law or the history of, you know, how our country functions.
I am a late pre in this dawn of we the people to the things that are and were and come to be. Once what we knew was only and numbers became. It is numbers and gold, and at 10th and A you don't have to know it ever. Opening words that show that we were once the first to recognize the immortality of numbered bodies.
So let's go back finally to, before we go around for some final words, let's go back to the title then. Zach, back to you. So we've been talking about politics. Let's take one more stab at the title. What is the gist of the title now that we've been well into the poem?
Well, I would say it's I, the People, in that politics isn't a category to be applied or to use to explain things. Politics is what happens to people, to a person, a single person.
So if you're saying to her, well, what's America mean to you? Sort of a Langston right. Hughesian question,
sure.
right? And the answer would be, I can't tell you what America is to America, but I can tell you what I, the people, I can't tell you about we, the people. I can tell you about I, the people. John Ashbery wrote a poem called The One Thing That Can Save America. It's very similar in a lot of ways to this poem. And he says, these are connected to my version of America. And there's a little bit of gay life, very sneaks kind of carefully through in that poem by Ashbery, a little bit of gay life, a little bit of urban life. And he's basically saying, yeah, America is all about the big continent and pioneering and all that, but I can tell you what my America is.
Well, it's America Joe? As a kind of constant cosmogonical process. You know, this idea that the preamble in some ways embodies that, the idea of a preamble, like you're starting, it's before you're starting something. So you're always going back to sort of what is the origins of the impulse, you know, the opening words, right? You know, the opening, you know, you're opening words that show that we were once the first to recognize. So this is the immortality of numbered bodies. So, you know, there's this idea that you're recognition, that you're sort of going back and sort of thinking about how one's identified, but there's something behind that identification.
Nice. She uses the phrase opening words twice. There's no doubt that that's some kind of sly reference to the preamble, but to the general thing about what opening words
or
do,
what we
including
start.
The title that embarrasses her a little bit. Well, okay, before we get to the Gathering Paradise segment, let me ask each of you to offer a final brief word on this poem or maybe something more on what you get from it. Erica, will you go first? Final word?
I guess what I just keep thinking about is how, despite the fact that this poem was published in 86, still feels, you know, unbelievably timely, and I think that that's, you know, quite a testament to the strength of the poem. And
timely in what sense?
Thinking about, you know, the status of the individual in the world and questioning the status of the self among politics, you know, in the midst of war, in the midst of surveillance, you know.
Sure, and there's the whole question of a liberal president saying to the world, or part of the world, we don't want to tell you how to live, and at the same time, democracy is the only way to go. That whole problem.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Zach, final word?
I was just going to say I was very intensely impressed at all times by the technical aspects of the poem, by the way that it's both very fluid. There's no sense of stiffness, but yet she uses those clip phrases, and at the same time I'm also bowled over by the dexterity, the way that, you know, the pronouns shift back and forth at it's such a rapid way that. You can really zoom in on a part and really hone in on it, but at the same time, there's just such a complete mastery of different tones and subtle changes going throughout the whole poem that's really inspiring. This poem, the sequence of poems that it's from, is one of the first things I read by Alice Notley, and it's one of the things that made me realize you can do a lot more with poetry than I thought you could. So
nice.
Yeah.
Great. We picked well. Joe?
Well, I think my comment is the media-specific comment, but to actually piggyback a little bit on what Zach is saying, one of the media-specific things that struck me was the line break on the page versus the line break in the audio, which is, there's a sort of this very sort of flowing and song-like, as is much of her work in the audio. The line break is much more disruptive when you read it. You know, it feels like some of the sentences break and you kind of like dive underwater and you come up and maybe the sentence continues and maybe it doesn't. And that's really interesting to me. And the other media-specific thing is that I think in the Pennsound recording, you have this coda, which is the in the dark coda, which we haven't really discussed. And is that actually part of the poem or not? And well, in the
MP3,
it is.
It is. So what happens there?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I think the In the Dark, the coda, goes back to this idea of the embarrassment. You know, the idea of she brings up the specter of political correctness, and then she but she also corrects the poem also to almost to make it into, when she brings up you, you know, does that make it a love poem? Is she correcting it to make it a love poem, or is she correcting it to make it truly democratic? It's really, this makes it a little bit more baffling.
She's complicating it.
Yeah.
She's making a problem out of it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, we like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of Gathering Paradise, which is a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow hands to gather a little something really poetically good, to hail or commend someone or something going on in the poetry world. So who's ready to gather some paradise? I think the furthest traveling should go first. Joe?
Oh, I guess gather that's me. Some okay. paradise? Well, you know, I've been really impressed by what Danny Snelson is doing and the sort of things that he's bringing together with, I mean, he brings together this sort of very organic combination of, you know, performance, sound art, sort of poetry, archival stuff, translation. You know, you just got it all
other than
together.
Just putting Danny Snelson into our search box and finding him, which should be easy. Where do we look for him?
Well, I guess, you know, one of his projects is My Dear Countess. I mean, he does a lot of new media projects, so he's kind of like
he's all over the place,
but I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, and I'll proudly say that Danny is moving to Philadelphia.
I hope you don't screw
him
up.
Part of the University of Pennsylvania community. He's also a guest editor at Poem Talk.
Yeah, yeah, one of the invisible proletariats of your operation.
You caught us. Yeah, you caught us. Danny Snelson, an excellent shout-out. Zach?
I'd have to give a shout out to, and I shouldn't be disqualified because he is a very close friend of mine, and when I was learning to be a poet, but I think he is an excellent poet, and his name is Mike Hauser.
Yeah, I was going to mention Mike.
Mike is a phenomenal poet, and he's been putting out more chapbooks. A lot of his work has been appearing more recently lately, and he's a great poet.
He's very funny.
Very funny
Spell
poet.
Spell the last name.
Hauser.
Okay. And is he another Midwesterner?
Yes, we're from
this
that.
Is great.
We're from that
I'm
sturdy
so
German
glad.
Stock.
I'm
there.
So glad there are all these Milwaukeeans. Is that what we say? Milwaukeeans?
Milwaukeeans.
Milwaukeeans here, because we're hearing about people we wouldn't otherwise hear. Well, that's all the constitutionality we have time for in Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House at the University of Pennsylvania. And the Poetry Foundation, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Erica Kaufman, Joe Malutis, and Zach Piper, and to Poem Talk's director and engineer, James Lemaire, and to our longtime editor, Steve McLaughlin. Next time on Poem Talk, Herman Beavers, Nada Gordon, and Charles Bernstein take on the outlandish performance of Vachel Lindsay. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again for that or another Poem Talk.